homeowners who applied for a grant to improve the energy efficiency of their properties will, after all, have their applications processed following the reversal of a decision to end the scheme. The Minister for Communications, Climate Action and Environment, Richard Bruton, has confirmed more than 300 homeowners who'd been awaiting approval for the Deep Retrofit grant will have their applications assessed and honoured in line with existing terms and conditions. And the Minister is with us in studio. Minister, I've read your statement, it's a lengthy enough one, about the SEAI scheme, what's going to happen to those who've been discommoded and what's going to happen into the future. Nowhere in that statement is there an apology to the hundreds of people who've been left upset last week and left wondering about their own family finances, perhaps with properties that they can't live in, properties that are vacant.
Well, I think the important thing is, you know, I met today with the CEO of the SEAI, and we have decided that all of those over 300 projects which applied before the July deadline for the Deep Retrofit scheme, they will be processed. And we have lifted the October deadline for the completion of works, so they will be able to deliver their programmes. I think there's no doubt that suspending approval pending a review would have created too great uncertainty and too long a delay. And that had been the proposal. And I think that was unreasonable. And that's why we have decided to make a change in this. So this will give people reassurance. I've also announced today that I'm establishing a task force to develop a much more aggregated model for delivering retrofit, because we need to scale up the level of schemes. These programmes, which have been run, many of them on a pilot basis, are not adequate
and we will
to
come,
the challenge.
Let's come back to some of those points, but this all broke last Tuesday. You've had almost a week to get your house in order, really, in the government department and in the SEAI, and reverse that decision. It's taken 6 or 7 days. People have been left in limbo and in some distress. We've heard them on the airwaves. No sign of a simple sorry.
Well, obviously, I regret any distress that's caused. What happened here was there was a massive surge in demand, and many of those came in at the very, very late in the day. The way in which departments normally manage this is through the approval mechanism. As we discovered, in some cases, contractors had encouraged people to go ahead with work without the approval mechanism. But I believe that the proposed approach, which was to suspend pending a review, that would have been unreasonable to homes, because a lot of people, because of the nature of this deep retrofit scheme, they would have had a lot of pre-planning. So I think the approach that was being proposed was unreasonable, and that's why I met
perhaps
today.
Perhaps people might say at those time frames, an ill-conceived platform on which to try and do a retrofit in the first place, added to which the suspension of this scheme, added to which a nearly a week delay from your own department in coming out with some sort of reversal or ameliorative measures for people. People might say, is this something we can really have trust in?
I think absolutely. I mean, what's happening here is there's a massive surge in interest in doing retrofit work, and it's crucial to our climate agenda. We have, and we're under very significant pressure to step up our performance.
But did you mess
in this
it up?
Area. I'm not happy with the way this decision was reached. I can understand it, but I'm not happy with how it was reached. But we have made sure now that people will have that certainty. But we're also making clear that for the future, we're going to have to approach this in a very different way. And that's why it's really important that we now address how we scale up.
And we'll come on to that,
that.
But there have been
activity.
Political charges in that 6 or 7 day vacuum where this leading up to today's decision. Amongst those charges, when did the minister know that the scheme had run out of money, or indeed had the scheme run out of money, the 10 million allocated for this year, was it diverted elsewhere midway through?
Well, I think the important thing is that it was only on the 11th of July that I made 20 million extra available to SEAI following the mid-year capital review to allow them to deliver all of their programmes. And at that point, they were confident they would be able to deliver those programmes.
Let's talk about the retrofit scheme, though. Let's look at the finances.
Yes, and that was one of them. That was one of the retrofit schemes was a big source.
Well, explain to us, how much money was there this year for those retrofit schemes?
Well, there was 10 million available for the deep retrofit. There's now 10 million available. Initially, they had made a budget available of 7 million, and I made an additional money available to them.
And is it the case that the money ran out,
The money is being gradually allocated, and like all departments
within that 10 million envelope, though, was that money there for that retrofit scheme? Was it?
Yes,
was it a case that there were just simply too many applicants, or was it that the money, if you like, had been pulled from the SEAI for other purposes?
No, this was a pilot scheme, and there was always the intention that as a pilot it would have to be reviewed. I think the mistake that was made is that in undertaking that review, they suspended some of those who had come in and said, we will do the review and then trigger the payment to those in what, you know, built on the results of the review. I think in retrospect, it was unreasonable to expect people to have to wait, to have that delay and that uncertainty. And given the way that this had been, you know, these programs are put together with a contractor assembling a number of people together. And, you know, for right or wrong, an expectation was built up that you could proceed without approval. Now, that is in breach of any approach to any scheme. You can't do works without the approval. But I think in the light of what has happened here, we believe that all of those who are applied should be processed in the normal way, and we will be able to manage this within our budgets.
Back to the political charge, the Green Party MEP, Kieran Cuff, he asked whether the government knew the scheme was running out of money before the local and EU elections in May.
No, absolutely not. I mean, the reality was that in the first quarter of this year, very low level of application came in, only 1 million. In the second quarter, that surged to 12 million. So there was a very late surge, if you like, in interest in this scheme, which came in.
It was ever thus, though, wasn't it, with deadline-related grant schemes?
Well, this had been running, of course. They'd had a deadline, but it had been running along for quite a number, a period, and the level of interest was probably at a level. Then there was this sudden surge. But I think, you know, it is an indication that there is a growing interest in wanting to address the climate issues. And that's a source of encouragement to me.
And yet, as you look forward now to this, the future of this retrofit scheme, you talk about another pilot programme in 2020. Talk about a review of best international practice. People are perhaps a little fatigued with the number of pilot programmes and best international practice reviews, and maybe we should just be getting on with it.
We are getting on with it, but there's a number of programmes out there, warmer homes, the ordinary better energy homes, but these essentially rely on individual homes or very small groups of homes coming together. That's certainly not going to be adequate, and what I indicated in the Climate Action Plan is that I would be designing a new scheme which would allow us aggregate work, probably on an area basis, have smart funding, have aggregated advice to people, give people confidence in the advice, the quality of the work that they will get, and to deliver a package on an area basis. So I'm now commencing the work to design that. We intend to trial that next year in a very tangible way, but we will be continuing to run other programmes, and that's, you know, there's a range of programmes in the SEAI, but we are now going to develop a much more aggregated model so we can meet our climate expectations.
Let's move on to some of the rhetoric that's been coming out of the UK in recent days around Brexit. But first of all, this incident in County Fermanagh where the PSNI are saying some of their officers are lucky to be alive this morning following that bomb explosion.
It's extremely disturbing, and I think while it obviously would be wrong to speculate on the motives that were here, I think it does underline the importance that we do all possible to overcome the political vacuum that's in the North and the huge uncertainty that's coming from the Brexit process. So I think it is a reminder to us who are our politicians that we need to focus on practical solutions in people's lives to avoid this sort of return to this sort of activity.
Boris Johnson, in the last hour, he's called on France and Germany to compromise on Brexit, reiterating his point, the UK is ready to leave without a deal on the 31st of October. Time for the government to be very strong.
I think it's important, and people are forgetting what's in the withdrawal agreement. What's in the withdrawal agreement is a long transition period to allow Boris Johnson to negotiate a robust free trade agreement for long-term good relations between Europe and Britain. That is on offer. What is there also is an insurance policy so that north-south there would not be a return to a hard border. There would be sufficient regulatory alignment north and south to avoid that happening. That was an objective of the British government as well as the Irish government. So those are there. And there is also a provision in the withdrawal agreement that, you know, no European Union would unreasonably, if you like, as the British say, trap the UK within a customs arrangement if solutions could be found to the hard border. So within the withdrawal agreement, we have a lot of the process there where Boris Johnson can get the sort of outcome that both Britain, north, south of Ireland and the EU need. And I think it is, you know, people need to revisit what's in that agreement instead of, you know, just focusing on some hardline political positions that are being adopted.
We're going to be talking to Tommy Gorman in a minute or two about some of what British cabinet ministers, one in particular, Priti Patel, has been saying, the new Home Secretary, talking about a, come the 31st of October, a clampdown on the free movement of EU nationals at UK ports and airports. Are you liking what she's saying? And do you think the common travel area, that memorandum of agreement we have with Great Britain, reciprocal rights for UK and Irish citizens, that it can withstand the pressure?
Well, you know, it's not an ideal way to be doing business to have all of this sort of leaking and threatening, and that sort of approach is not designed to give people confidence that their political leaders are going to manage this process in a proper way. I think we need to see the Barnier team join again with the UK to recognise afresh the benefits that are in the withdrawal agreement, listen to the UK. It was the UK, not the European Union, who decided that it wouldn't be just north-south regulatory alignment, that that would apply in a customs territory involving the whole of the UK. That was a choice of the UK government. So there are issues here that I think need to be handled in CAM negotiations.
Richard Bruton, Minister, thank you indeed for coming into studio for us.